Hey guys, this is Nick Page from the Tripod Portrait Session and Improve Photography Podcast, and you are listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James.
This episode of the Petapixel Photography Podcast is proudly sponsored by FreshBooks. Springtime means tax time, and their cloud-based accounting software helps freelance photographers and small business owners get their lives back and get back to shooting by making paperwork a breeze. To sign up for your free 30-day trial, go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 56. Matt Granger is not impressed with Sony service. In this episode, Australian photographer Matt Granger highlights Sony service. A wedding photographer's gear is stolen, and she loses all the images. Impossible's founder wants to save Fuji's instant film now. Parachute aims to be the Netflix of rental gear. And a fool takes his camera drone to new heights of stupidity. All that and more in episode 56 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Nick, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Nick Page is a fellow photography podcaster, an extremely talented photographer based in Washington State, and he's an educator as well as a really great guy. He leads workshops and tours, has a popular YouTube channel, and I think you'll really enjoy his photography. And you can find that all over at nickpagephotography.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 56 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. As many of you know, I love the Sony gear. They've been doing amazing things with the technology in those mirrorless cameras. But that said, I still have my Nikon gear, and I'm probably going to have it for quite some time. But what happens when you need to get your Sony stuff serviced? And that's what people are talking about since Australia-based photographer Matt Granger posted a video entitled, "Why I Am Dropping Sony E-Mount from My Pro Kit." He posted that to his popular YouTube channel, and by popular, I mean over 400,000 people strong as of this recording. And this particular video that he put up is just about to reach 60,000 views. And that's in just a few days' time. On Petapixel alone, the story's been shared almost 3,000 times and over 200 people have commented on it so far. Matt's video is quickly becoming one of the most talked about thus far in 2016. A video which has caused many who shoot Sony or were considering to shoot Sony to tap the brakes just a little bit. As he makes clear in the video, he loves the Sony gear. There's nothing wrong with the Sony gear. They create incredible images and it has nothing to do with the actual gear itself. But what he doesn't love is Sony's service. And as a result, for his pro work, which includes leading workshops and traveling around the world, he's going to be sticking with his Nikon gear for the foreseeable future. I reached out to Matt and he's given me the okay to play some select clips from that 16 and a half minute video. We're not going to play the whole thing here, just a little bit of it. So let's see what Matt has to say and discuss it as we go.
First off the bat, I want to say I don't have an issue with Sony products. I think their A7S, A7R, A6300, all of these cameras are fantastic and they're offering great quality. They're improving all the time. There are downsides, ups and downs to mirrorless versus DSLRs. You'll know if it suits you or not. What I'm talking about today here specifically is it's specific to me, one, and it's specific to their after-sales support. And I'm talking specifically about Australia, but reports I've had, it's quite similar around the world. So before I get into it, let me just explain how I work to make sure, you know, you understand the context. So I'm often, you know, let's say home for 2 weeks and then off running a tour in Mongolia for 2.5 weeks and then going to shoot for myself in Bhutan for 2 weeks, then in, you know, know, Bangkok for a few days, then back home to do studio work for a couple of weeks, then back off to Peru for 2 weeks, and then Argentina for a week, and then back for a few weeks. So I really pound my gear. It goes out in all kinds of different conditions. And when I'm back in Australia, it's often a small window that I can actually get things done. So that's how I work, and I need gear that works with me. So with my Nikon equipment, often I'll find, okay, my sensor's getting dirty by the end of the trip, or I've damaged something. As soon as I get in, I let Nikon know that I need something serviced. When I get back, I drop it off or I send it to them and then get it back in time for my next trip. And if, you know, it's not ready, then often I'm able to get a loaner because I'm a Nikon Professional Services member.
Okay, Matt is a busy, busy guy. You know, he doesn't have the time to wait for repairs that are going to take upwards of a month or so. He needs them back in a reasonable time so he can get back out there and lead his workshops and have that gear available. Now, with his Nikon Professional Services membership, NPS, he can be reasonably assured that he's going to get that gear back before he heads out for the next trip. But not so much with Sony, he's saying. And if he can't get that stuff back in time, there's loaner gear available. So problem solved on the Nikon front. But here's the thing. Most people are never going to be NPS members because they don't own enough gear to qualify, and they're going to have to rely on the standard level of service that everyone else gets. In most cases, if you want to join one of these professional services from the various manufacturers, you have to own at least 2 of their pro bodies, that means 2 of their full frame bodies, and 3 of their really expensive lenses, and also be a working professional. There's a lot of hoops that you have to jump through just to be eligible for these things. All right, let's get to the next part of Matt's video.
So I'm going to do this really briefly, but I want to recount a specific service incident I just had with Sony. I'm going to be really summary though, because as I said, everything's changed now. There's been a recent announcement. So my A7 R2, the back button had an issue on it. Keeping this nice and simple, I called once. The call center was in the Philippines. Guy was nice, but the line was so bad he couldn't hear me. So after half an hour on the phone, had to hang up, no progress. I called back later. Same thing happened. After going through heaps of steps, the line was so bad, they couldn't get anywhere, had to hang up. Then I contacted my rep at Sony headquarters, which is a privilege not a lot of people have, I realized that. He organized for the call center to call me back. They did. Long phone call, went through all of the details, okay. Then I had to wait for the Sony Authorized Repair Center to call me, because in Australia, Sony don't do their own repairs, they outsource them, and this is common around the world for Sony. Wait 2 days, then they contact me. Long story short, it was one of the rudest calls I've ever had. They called and said, "This is Sony, so what is this?" And I actually called them on it and asked, "Are you having a bad day? What's with this attitude?" We got through it anyway. A few days later, they picked it up. It was couriered to the repair center because there's only the one in Australia and you can't just walk in there. You need to have it sent in. After a week, no contact to say that they'd received it or anything like that, so I contacted them. They had received it, they just don't let you know that they've received it. Now, that was a pattern throughout this whole process. Unless I contacted them, there was no correspondence. And every time I contacted them by chance, they would say, "Oh, something has just happened today, and it's a time where we would normally get in touch or wouldn't, but something just happened, like, oh, you got in touch today, yes, well, normally we would let you know after this many days, which happens to be today, and it would have to be in the next half an hour, because I called at 4:30 in the afternoon." And then I called later when I hadn't heard anything, "Oh, well, the technician just looked at it today, and we need to order some parts. The ETA should be the 22nd. And then I just tested it and said, "Oh, I'm not going to contact them anymore. Let's wait and see how long for them to actually contact me," because I was then on a trip and I'd missed my window of getting the gear back to use it anyway. And they have no loaner service because they have no professional services at Sony. So then finally, when I was coming back from my trip, I emailed them to say, "Look, it's almost 2 weeks since you last contacted me. I haven't heard anything. Oh, we sent it out a few days ago and they hadn't contacted me. They didn't tell me they were sending it back. They hadn't confirmed which address it came to because they actually picked it up from somewhere else and it had been sitting at the post office." All told, it took over a month for it to come back. That was for a small rear button that they didn't have in stock. And I asked them to do a sensor clean on it, which I had confirmed in writing and on the phone several times. Unfortunately, because they never seemed to have stock of anything, there was that extra time delay. And when it came back finally, after over a month, they hadn't done the sensor clean. Unbelievable. And I just can't work like that. So I had been planning to get a couple of A7Ss to turn my workflow into 4K video using them. I love the Zeiss autofocus lenses, but I just can't work like that. So at the moment, and as of last week, I made this video saying that with Sony service being so poor, it's just not a viable option for me. If that's not a big deal for you having those kind of turnarounds, then it's not a problem. The products are still great. Go for it. And then on Friday, when I was deciding to remake the video, I got a link from someone that Sony has now announced they are going to do a professional services program. So now the ballpark has completely changed, right?
You know, that's just amazing to me. Personally, I think Sony is a victim of their success and they're experiencing growing pains. You know, Canon and Nikon have made and serviced cameras for many, many decades now, and they've got their system down. Sony, maybe not so much. Every step of the way with my Canon and Nikon repairs, I would get updates. I didn't feel like I was having to pull teeth just to find out what was going on. But Matt's experience, though, with Sony seems like a comedy of errors, doesn't it? A month to repair a button, and they somehow miss the sensor cleaning. That's just disappointing. As Matt said at the end of the clip, Sony now has Pro Service available there in Australia, something that's been available here in the United States and elsewhere since 2014, so that'll definitely help. But the requirements are not likely to be met by most people, since you need to own at least one Sony full-frame body and three of their pricier lenses. Most people just aren't going to be able to go for that. And the same is true for Canon and Nikon. And this is something that Matt experienced firsthand there in Australia. Which brings me back to the fact that for most of us, and that includes me, if our gear breaks, it's going into repair without any special privileges, and we're waiting. Matt didn't have a very pleasant experience with Sony support, and they knew who he was, his Sony rep. Knowing that he was Matt Granger, 400,000 plus people strong on YouTube, had the service center call him, and they gave him attitude. Later in the video, Matt goes on to talk about how he hopes that Sony's going to bring their repairs in-house rather than sending them out to outside repair centers. That would definitely help. And he also recounts how a friend has sent things into Sony for repair there in Australia, carefully packaged it, only to have it returned without packing material in the box. And as a result, it was damaged in transit. You know, that is just unacceptable. Here's some more of Matt's thoughts and a bit of a wrap-up on this issue.
It also does worry me a little that in the experience I've had, their current system is working so poorly, and then they're going to make these huge changes and start charging for it. If that's all going through your authorized service center that's currently working at this current level, and I should point out, I don't want it to seem like this was a one-off thing that I experienced this. I actually went back to them in email and in phone call to check, was my case typical? Were the turnaround times between when they responded to things, the amount of communication they gave me, the time frames involved in getting the work done and sending things back, and they said it was all typical, nothing was out of the ordinary. So over a month, and they missed the sensor clean. The sensor clean obviously was an oversight, but a really frustrating one for me, because I already missed one trip with it, and then it comes back and it's not done. And as I said, yes, a lot of people like to clean their own sensors, but to keep your warranty, you're not meant to. And if you clean your own one and screw it up, well, forget about there being any warranty. You can't say, well, I sent it to you and then you didn't clean the sensor. That's no excuse. I would need to send this back to them, potentially leave it for another month, and then maybe I can get the sensor done. I can't work like that. So, you know, to be honest, until I know that the service is actually working, I am not relying on Sony for my professional work any longer.
Okay, so over a month to get a button on the back fixed, and the sensor didn't end up getting cleaned. I think that Matt's video was very well thought out and fair, and overall it seems on the internets, that's right, the internets, people seem to get that. He wasn't bashing Sony, he loves the Sony gear, he's talking about his specific experiences with Sony in Australia. You know, it's been a few days now as I record this since Matt released his video, and I was curious to find out if he had heard from Sony, if there was any fallout from this, and what else might have happened. So I reached out to him, and here's what Matt had to say.
Hey, Sharky. So in terms of a response, I got a couple of messages directly. I saw a lot of discussion in forums and stuff. I've had no comment or response from Sony directly themselves. You know, the risk in a situation like this is that people Well, A, take it out of context, which thankfully not too many people have. It was my personal experience in Australia, and it wasn't a comment on the quality of the gear. It's just about the after-sales service. But the second issue is that something like this, even if a video gets a few hits, after a few days, it dies down and then it's just swept under the rug. As customers, we all have rights. And as a photographic community, we should be coming together and sharing our experiences of fantastic service or terrible service so that we can actually learn from each other's experiences. As an individual, you can just feel overwhelmed and that you have no options. But when people, you know, share their experiences and it becomes known that there's certain common issues going on, then actually some change could come out of it. So hopefully, you know, someone's listening and people will continue to speak up with their experiences. And if there is a systemic issue, it'll be addressed.
Now, while deep into editing this episode, Matt messaged me to let me know that he's since heard from Sony and that they expressed that customer service is not only important to them, but they're always working to continually improve it. If there's any updates to this story, we'll be sure to let you know, of course. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I should let you guys all know that I'm going to be an upcoming guest on Matt's show, Tog Life, sometime in April, I believe. He asked me to be on his show months before this story broke, and our coverage was not influenced by this in any way. Just wanted to let you guys know that. As we always say here on the podcast, thanks to the amazing technology available to us, sharing our photos is so easy. And so is running your business if you use FreshBooks. Whether you make your money with your photography or you have another small business, you'd rather be out shooting and editing your photos than dealing with paperwork, right? I know I would. Well, FreshBooks solves this problem, making it incredibly fast and easy. Their amazingly simple cloud-based invoicing solution keeps your cash flow details all in one place so you know who you've invoiced, who's paid, who hasn't, and what your income is. And the FreshBooks mobile app is awesome. It lets you take pictures of your receipts and organize them later so you have them ready to go come tax time. Do yourself a favor and check out FreshBooks. You know, they believe in this podcast and we want to support them, right? You'll be more prepared, less stressed, and you can get back to doing what we all love to do, taking photos and editing them. On average, FreshBooks users get paid nearly a week faster when accepting online payments through their system, cut 2 days a month out of administrative tasks, and double their revenue in the first 24 months. That is amazing. More time shooting means more time to make money rather than shuffling papers, and that's huge. Right now, FreshBooks is offering our listeners a free 30-day trial, so make sure you take advantage of that. Go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the how did you hear about us section. That's PETAPIXEL, of course. Thank you so much, FreshBooks, for your support. When you're a wedding photographer, you have responsibilities that other photographers just don't. I mean, there is a lot on the line there. After all, if you screw things up, you've not only lost photos which can't be reshot as the wedding is over and done with and people have gone home, you may very well get sued. That has happened many times before, as we know. Which reminds me, make sure that you have insurance and look into becoming an LLC or otherwise, you know, some other form of corporation so you can protect your personal assets. Because if you do get sued, you don't want anyone taking your house. Well, this is perhaps something that Boston-based photographer Francielle Santo is paying attention to now, as this past weekend, things went horribly, horribly wrong for her. And that's an understatement, actually. For a wedding photographer, it was pretty much as bad as it gets. And it's not at all good for one's business. This is not the kind of publicity that you want. As Fox 25 in Boston reports, Santo is making a public plea for the return of not only the $10,000 in gear that she lost as a result of thieves breaking into her car, but you guessed it, all of the photos from the wedding that she had just shot. If that had happened to me, I'd be sick to my stomach. And I know a lot of you wedding shooters out there are just like, oh, I can't even imagine. That is a nightmare scenario right there. Now, before we get deeper into the woods here, I don't at all want to bash Santo. You know, kicking someone when they're down doesn't help anyone. That said, it's my personal opinion that if you're going to hang your shingle out as a professional, you need to follow best practices for your profession. And in the case of a wedding photographer, that means making sure that the photos you shot cannot possibly be lost in any way, shape, or form. You know, part of that means that ideally you would have a camera that has two card slots in it. That way, if the card in slot one fails, you always have the images right there backed up on card number two. Now, I understand not everyone has a camera like that, but I believe that in the near future, most, if not all cameras, especially those used by wedding shooters, are going to have dual card slots. And if you're looking for a new body, that might be high on the list of features to look for, I think. But if you don't have a camera with this feature, what can you do to ensure that if your gear is stolen, the photos are safe? That's right. You keep the cards on you. And that even goes for if you have two card slots. Always have one copy of the photos in your pocket, right? This is not difficult at all to do. You know, there really isn't an excuse for not taking this particular precaution. That's unforgivable. And that may sound harsh, but we have a saying in recent years that's something like, I gave you one job. You know, in other words, you were hired to shoot our wedding. How did you screw that up? Now, the photographer is offering a $1,000 reward for the return of the cards with her client's images on it. And while it might seem unlikely that thieves would return it, these types of pleas have actually been known to work in the past, so who knows? She tells Fox 25 in Boston, quote, "It's like my worst nightmare right now to not have her photos. Just please return that. Just the flashcards. That's all I want," end quote. Now, Santos says that what happened is that after the ceremony, she dropped off her second shooter and drove into Boston to pick up some friends. She says she locked her car, of course, and it was only unattended for about 20 minutes or so, but that gave thieves enough time to smash the window and make off with her gear. You know, I'm really wondering if her car had vinyl lettering on it with her business name, etc. I've often thought that while it's a great way to advertise your business, it's also a great way to advertise that you might have some expensive gear inside. After all, a thief has little to lose by smashing a window and taking all of like, what, 5-6 seconds to look inside for your camera bag. So I think it'd be wise for photographers to maybe also have some lettering on there that states that no gear is left in the vehicle unattended. I don't think that would hurt. It's very important that you make sure that it is impossible for the photos to just disappear. They must be in multiple places. You've just got to do that. Santos says she has a backup camera, but plans to buy another as she has more weddings coming up. You know, it makes me wonder, did she shoot this wedding with just one camera? It doesn't sound like she had her backup camera with her, otherwise that would have been stolen. So maybe she had that at home. So she was shooting a wedding with one camera. That's not a good idea, of course. If your main camera goes down, and it happens quite a bit to wedding photographers, and you don't have the backup with you, you can't shoot the ceremony, can you? Let's just hope that she learned a lesson from this and takes precautions to keep those images safe. And this is a cautionary tale for everyone out there. If someone's hiring you and it's something like a wedding that can't be reshot, make sure you have those things safe. Now, the bride is apparently a friend of hers and is currently on her honeymoon. And she says that if the thieves don't return the memory cards, she'll shoot new photos for her and give her the nicest album she can. But that's not the same, of course. That's not her actual wedding day, and she will forever know that. If you're a wedding photographer, please take the steps to make sure that if the unthinkable happens, you at very least have the wedding photos on you, in your pocket, or wherever, and insurance can take care of the rest if your gear is stolen. Next. Here's an interesting concept that I think many are going to be intrigued by. How great would it be to rent the latest and greatest gear rather than buying and being locked into the same camera company, same body, etc.? I mean, imagine being able to have a Nikon 1 month, shoot Sony the next, Canon after that. That would be pretty cool, right? Well, that's what Parachute aims to do. That's P-A-R-A-C-H-U-T with that line over the U. You know what I'm talking about. This new startup aims to be the Netflix of camera gear by allowing you to rent unlimited gear with endless swaps, no contracts, and free shipping. Right now, if you want to get your hands on gear that's not yours, no, not that way, you rent it from places like lens rentals, borrow lenses, or even peer-to-peer services such as Camera Lens or ShareGrid. But Parachute is trying to shake things up with their subscription-based model instead. So how it works is like this. You pay a $99 US fee for the first month, then after that, a monthly fee of $149. You provide them with a list of gear you'd like, from cameras to lenses to drones, accessories, and a whole lot more. They evaluate your needs and their available inventory, and then they send you gear to use for your project, which may or may not exactly be the items you were looking to get. Now, that's the part that I find kind of interesting right there, because you might want, let's say, a 5D Mark III, and I don't know, they send you a Canon 70D? I don't know how that works exactly. We're going to see. So they say that you keep the gear for as long as you'd like, and when you're done with it, you just send it back to them using the prepaid labels, because shipping is free to and from them. Now, if you decide that rather than sending it back, you'd like to keep the gear that they sent to you, Parachute will sell it to you at a discounted price. I mean, after all, some or all of it is already used, right? They haven't publicly launched as of yet, but their grand opening is coming soon. And, you know, this is an interesting idea, but is it actually going to work? If you could get exactly what you wanted, and you could have yourself a nice little setup to take your photography to the next level, that might totally be worth it. I mean, think about it. Let's say you're a wedding shooter, and you can get a second body and some really fast f2.8 glass for your weddings that you have coming up, and that just costs you $149 a month. That would be pretty cool. But I have my doubts, of course, because it's me, right? Seriously, though, is this sort of business model sustainable with expensive gear? I mean, it's one thing for, like, let's say Netflix to send out DVDs that maybe only cost them a couple dollars. So if you keep it, no harm, no foul. But what happens when you have $5,000-$6,000 worth of gear? That's craziness. And if they go under, do you get to keep all that gear? I don't know. So stay tuned, because when this thing launches, you know people are going to be talking about it. They're going to try out the service. And if it works out great, why not? $149 a month to get the best gear that you can get? That's not too bad. Next. Last month, in February 2016, Fujifilm announced the last of its peel-apart instant film, FP100C. But now, Impossible Project founder Florian Kapps is trying to keep it alive. Kapps left Impossible back in July 2013 and later founded SuperSense. And now there are reports that he's in talks with management from Fujifilm in Tokyo, Japan, to keep this film from disappearing forever. I think it's important to note that things usually disappear for a good reason, because no one uses them anymore. That's usually a sign, right? But for some, dead or dying products are seen as an opportunity. It kind of reminds me of Kodak thinking that they're going to make 8mm movie film cameras happen again. You know, I like their spirit, but like big hair, thin ties, and fluorescent shoelaces from the 1980s, it's just not going to happen again. It's just not. Now, that's my opinion, but do you want one? Yeah, me neither. So how about Fujifilm Instant Color Film? Much better shot, I think, but it's still going to be very niche, of course. On his blog, Kapps said, quote, "Sitting here at the airport and looking at the plane that will soon take me to Tokyo, I take my very first picture of this journey. Slowly peeling it apart, I cannot help but getting sentimental and remember my last pack film journey a few years ago. I simply have to win the trust of the Fuji management. Because this time we're talking about the very last machines for this wonderful instant film material. And if I fail, this iconic beauty will be gone forever." End quote. Kapps, it's okay. We're going to survive if this goes away. I promise. There's a petition on change.org which has now been signed by over 17,000 people. But when's the last time you used FP100C? I mean, most people don't even know what that is, right? Myself, it has been a long time. Very few people have Polaroid film pack cameras or Polaroid backs anymore and just don't need it. If you have one of these cameras, you've got it on a shelf somewhere. It's quaint and it's part of your decor now. You're not actually wanting to use it to shoot, I think. You know, we're solidly in the digital era, and while it's fun to think back to the days of instant film and kids are having fun with the Instax cameras, mine included, it's not exactly a big market, and that's for a reason. Next. As we all know by now, in the United States, you're to keep your camera drone under the 400-foot ceiling laid out by the FAA. And there are similar guidelines in the European Union and around the world. Well, in the Netherlands, a drone owner apparently thought these guidelines meant to keep drones from colliding with aircraft didn't apply to him, and he took it up to over 11,000 feet. That's just incredibly foolish, of course. The anonymous drone owner originally posted his footage to YouTube, saying that he was trying to break a world record with his DJI Phantom 2 drone, but the video was soon taken offline. However, it resurfaced on the VidMe site if you care to watch, and we'll have a link for that in the show notes. The 4-minute and 20-second video shows the drone rising up to 3.4 kilometers or approximately 2.11 miles above the ground. The drone was above a layer of clouds, and with only 27% battery life left, he began his descent back down to the ground. And when it touched down, there was just 4% left. As beautiful as the video is, this stunt was illegal and highly dangerous, of course. Not only could it have taken out an aircraft, but from that height, if it would have lost power or malfunctioned, it could have killed somebody on the ground. We say it all the time here on the show, just because you can doesn't mean you should. This guy put his needs for glory above the safety of others, and that is not cool. Imagine if someone had been killed. And for what? To break a world record? That's just stupid. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 56 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I hope you do, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LenSshark. And also, don't forget to check out our sponsor, FreshBooks. Head on over to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter Petapixel into the How Did You Hear About Us section. They support us, and we would love it if you supported them as well. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 57. Well, it's F8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.